that up here. Put that in the shredder. Sorry, y'all.
Let's frame it.
We got letterhead from the University of Kentucky up here, and I'm not sure who put this up here. All right. Tuesday, July 26th, we got a continuing our budget workshops, and we're going to start. Ms. Rich again is absent, but attendance today of Councilmember Gwen, Councilmember Susie Heinbachel, Councilman John Priester, Mayor Randy Ewers, and myself, Daniel Owen, for the record. And with that, I will turn it over to John Zobel.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today, City Council. As you had mentioned, this is our fourth budget workshop. Today we'll be discussing the enterprise funds. I would like to note that a few of our department heads would like to make a sub-presentation as it affects their departments on current issues and future issues that will be affecting their operations. And also at the conclusion of today's budget presentation, we would like our city engineer, Bill Stevens, to come up and give you a brief update on the unimproved roadways in the city and our plan for advancing improvement of those roads in the future. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Cindy Kelly, our Deputy Director of Budget and Finance, to begin the presentation.
Thank you. Cindy Kelly, Deputy Director of Budget and Finance, for the record. As John indicated, today is our fourth workshop. We're going to speak to the enterprise funds today. We will have the Airport Director, Matt Groh, do a short presentation for Airport, and the Recreation and Parks Director, Kathy Kreil, will come up and give you some information related to golf as well. The schedule of workshops remains the same. I will remind Council that on August 2nd, during your regular City Council meeting, you will be adopting the tentative millage. So you will see that on the in your agenda packet for the next City Council meeting. And just as a reminder, when you adopt a tentative millage, that is your ceiling. You can reduce it from there. We also now have the dates for our public hearings. So the first public hearing will be September 6th, and the second public hearing and the final adoption of the budget will be on September 20th. Both of those, again, will occur during regular City Council meetings. They will occur after 5 o'clock per Florida statute. And we are set for August 9th workshop as well, which will be the budget in its entirety being brought back before Council. The enterprise funds, just to give you an overview of what they are, we use them to account for operations that are financed and operated in a manner that's similar to a private business. So the costs are paid from user charges or from revenue sources other than general governmental revenue. The city maintains 7 enterprise funds. We have a water and sewer, airport, golf, sanitation, electric, telecommunications, and stormwater. All of the enterprise funds are balanced without the use of fund balance, with the exception of airport. We did use $140,000 of fund balance in the airport to balance their fund. That still leaves them with a cash reserve, though. That did not deplete their cash reserve. We do not have any rate or fee increases programmed into any of the enterprise funds. You guys were given a insert for your workbook that had the enterprise funds. We had the same summary page that showed all of the enterprises balanced. We don't have any changes. We don't have any increases in any of the enterprise funds. Most of them are flat from the current year. I wanted to just give a little bit of a highlight of what each of the enterprise funds are responsible for. The stormwater utility was actually established in 1988, and this is to dispose of our water runoff in a manner that's compliant with state and federal guidelines, ensuring that we protect the purity of the aquifer and prevent the city from being hit with the type of flooding that had occurred in the past in Ocala. And we were one of the first cities to create a stormwater management utility. The Ocala International Airport is an expanding aviation facility, and we provide an array of services out there, and we are also opening that up, you know, for business enterprises to come out and locate at the airport. The Golf Fund is a division of the Recreation and Parks. We operate it within an enterprise fund. We have a very nice course out in Muni. We did receive an award in 2009. As you are aware, Pine Oaks Golf Course is currently being operated through a private professional and continues to serve the citizens of Ocala. The Sanitation Fund has the responsibility of providing solid waste collection for the citizens of Ocala. We both do commercial and residential waste collection, and we have 8 recycling drop-off centers at the present time. The Water and Sewer Department provides and maintains water and wastewater treatment plants and the infrastructure for the city of Ocala's citizens. The water treatment plant treats groundwater by reducing the hardness through a lime softening process and provides disinfection through chlorination. The clean and safe drinking water is distributed through an extensive piping and pumping system grid that is maintained by the Water and Sewer Department. And the water in Ocala has won an award in the past for having, you know, good taste quality. The Electric Fund, we have 2 departments in the Electric Fund, the Electric and Customer Service. The Electric Department obviously provides our electric service, highly skilled, motivated team, and their goal is to provide outstanding customer service and reliable energy to all of the customers through implementation of advanced technology and continued use of proven industry standards, while protecting the environment, ensuring that the citizens have dependable, clean energy flow. The Customer Service Department's primary function is to provide information and service to all the citizens within our service territories, and that's the 629 city number where all of the calls come into. They provide information for the utility service accounts, arrange payment plans, do the extensions, aid customers in contacting other departments throughout the city, et cetera. And we have our Telecommunications Fund, which provides our broadband services to the city and to the community by a fiber optics-based broadband network. The network provides internal communications for the city of Ocala for business and administrative operations. And the network also services external customers, including other governmental agencies, educational institutions, the hospitals, medical facilities, and commercial and industrial businesses. And we wanted to, as John alluded to, we were going to talk about the unpaved roads program a little bit, and we wanted to update you that the Krosky Center floor project has been added to the CIP fund. That was a request from a prior workshop. And we also would like to ask if council has any other issues from prior workshops or questions that have come up upon review that you would like us to see to address before we invite the directors up to speak.
You may have any questions for staff before we get started on any previous workshop?
Okay, we're good, okay.
Move forward.
All right, on the 9th workshop, we will bring back the budget in its entirety, fully balanced between all funds. So I'll invite Matt Groh up for us to speak to the airport.
Good afternoon, Matt Groh, Airport Director.
Is that the one we centered on?
Yeah.
We're going to speak about 4 issues that we're working on that are affecting the airport.
Thank you.
We've got the terminal development proposals. We've got some economic issues to go over. Landmark Aviation, which is our retail fuel service provider out of the airport, and then our commercial aeronautical minimum standards. On the terminal development, and this has been it's been an ongoing project. We've been working on this since about 2005, when our airport consultant, RSNH at the time, came up with a pre-designed drawing. It's about 14,600 square feet. It includes FBO space, restaurant space, car rental offices, some room for additional vacant offices for expansion in the airport administration. We went to the state. We were looking for some grant funding. If you recall, they gave us an option. We could build a control tower or we could go with a terminal. Well, we decided to go with the control tower. We're looking at the terminal now. In 2010, the city issued an RFP. It was a very broad-based RFP that included FBO, terminal, airport development. We received 3 responses. The review committee ranked those responses. Number one was Landmark Aviation. They proposed a 50-50 partnership with the city. They were going to provide $2 million in funding. We would come up with the $2 million in grant funding for the terminal. They were also looking at a lease extension with that. Dunphy, which is a developer, they were proposing to design, build, and finance the terminal, and they would also provide some sort of an FBO at the appropriate time. And then we had a proposal from a company called Ocala Jet Center. It's a brand new company. They were proposing to also design, build, and then operate themselves as an FBO in that location. The rank differences between Landmark Aviation and Dunphy were so close, the review committee encouraged the two to get together and see if they could come up with some sort of a joint partnership, because you had one that was representative of an FBO, another one that was a developer. And we thought perhaps maybe the two could merge their expertises together and we'd come up with a good product. We've had several meetings with them. Landmark and Dunphy, they've come to an agreement. They've come to a partnership. We are waiting on a response from Landmark on some of the terms of the lease extension. Landmark wants a lease extension if they're going to put additional capital development into the airport and operate as an FBO in the new terminal. We have some concerns with that, staff does, which we'll get into in a few more slides. Get into some economic issues. This slide represents our fuel sales in gallons on the left and our number of airport operations on the right. Airport operations were estimated from the year 2010 and previous to that. We had no person counting every single time the wheels left the runway or touched the runway. So it was all estimated by staff. They were educated estimates. But nonetheless, if you look at the two comparatively, there's a real correlation between the number of operations and our total fuel sales. Both are declining. The decline in operations, the decline in fuel sales, it's affecting our bottom line. We're seeing rising expenses. Airport costs are increasing because of a potential loss in grant funding, both through the FAA and the state. We're also looking at a possible increase. We're also looking at a possible increase of about $60,000 in an FAA assessment because our operations are so low. When we originally applied to construct the control tower, we were estimating our operations around $100,000 a year, which essentially was the threshold for the FAA. Anything above that, FAA takes care of all the controller costs. Anything below that, there's a proportionate share that the sponsor airport would have to contribute. The next time the FAA does an audit of our operations and compares it to the level of activity for the control tower will be in 2012. It's possible that they can come back and hit us up with that assessment. Other airports are experiencing declines in operations, anywhere between 20, 30, even 40%. So the economy is to blame, and the decline is fairly uniform at other control-towered airports. But there are some local factors that we need to look at. And I want to share this chart with you. This depicts all of the Shell-branded FBOs in the state of Florida. And the reason we're showing Shell, Landmark Aviation at Ocala gets their fuel from Shell. They are branded with the Shell logo. So we look at all of those airports. We presume that the cost, the wholesale cost of that fuel is going to stay relatively consistent among all those airports. All the Shell branded airports are getting their fuel from the same place. There could be some differences in shipping costs and things like that, but overall, it's pretty negligible. When you look at where Ocala falls within those, we're on the high side when it comes to fuel cost. There's three Landmark locations in the state of Florida, and they are top three in avgas top four, or within the top four, pardon me, in jet fuel. Self-serve, Landmark has the only self-serve island at Ocala. So there's not a good comparison with that. But that's a pretty telling graph. It gives pilots options when they see that. They look at other airports, whether they provide those same levels of service or not that we can provide. They might look at Dunellen, they might look at Williston, Gainesville, even Leesburg. But they're looking. When the economy is like this and everybody's looking at the bottom line, if they can save $1,000 when they get fuel, if they have to drive an additional 10 minutes, they're doing it. T-hangers, when you look at some of the comparative airports, T-hangers, they're full. We have about 20 vacancies at Ocala. Leesburg has a wait list. They've had a wait list for years. And you look at where Leesburg falls on that list, nonetheless, they're about $1.50 less than Ocala, per gallon, I should say. Looking at Landmark Aviation, they are the sole retail fuel provider at Ocala. They're one of the largest FBO chains in the world, maybe the largest in the United States. Several locations, probably I think about 33, maybe 35 locations. Primarily commercial service airports, where those airports are pumping well over 2 million gallons of fuel on the general aviation side. It appears that the retail fuel margins are set at the corporate level. They're currently set, Ocala expires in 2018, about 7 years remaining. Puts us in a great position to negotiate. They are currently in default of their lease. The letter went out yesterday. We found several blanks in some of their fuel farm, fuel truck inspection forms, so they weren't following through with their obligations to inspect their equipment. There were some building maintenance issues that we held them in violation previous. Some of them were slow in being fixed. We reminded them of that in the letter that I sent yesterday. They've actually fixed a portion of that to their credit. I need to mention that. So the letter went out and the item was fixed the same day. The chart that I'm showing up here depicts the revenues that we receive from Landmark. We get a percentage of their concession sales. We also get 3.5 cents per gallon on every gallon of fuel that they sell. Fuel is the lower line, the concession sales, the middle line, the total of the two are above that. You can see our fuel revenues are declining. Their concession revenues are declining as well. How do we get here? All that being said, Landmark Aviation meets our minimum standards. In 1988, we issued an RFP looking for FBO services. And we established a set of commercial aeronautical minimum standards to meet at that time. And essentially, the city was looking for an FBO. And in order to be an FBO, in other words, a retail fuel service provider, that FBO needed to provide maintenance, avionics, or radio repair, aircraft rental, and aircraft flight training. In order to sell fuel, you needed to provide those items. We've been operating under those standards for about 20 years. What we've seen, we've had interest within that time frame, unsolicited interest in other businesses that wanted to operate on the airport, but were somewhat limited by these minimum standards. What we're looking at doing is trying to make things a little bit easier for corporations, businesses to come onto the airport and operate. We believe that we can relax some of these standards by giving choices, options, instead of limiting or stating what we require as far as services go, maintenance, avionics, flight training, aircraft rental, we can give them an option. They perhaps can do 3 out of 7, 3 out of 5. We're looking into that. It's something that we brought up to the airport board in the past, but honestly, the airport board and airport staff see things a little bit differently with that. With the city manager's encouragement, we're going to revisit that with the airport board in the coming weeks, and then we'll bring it back to this council for their review on a new set of minimum standards. Finally, I want to remind council, we're looking at instituting a lease policy on the airport, something that we can put down on paper that will establish a fairness and equitable treatment of future lease agreements on the airport. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. President.
Mr. Gwynn.
Let me ask you, because I was involved in that RFP on that committee, and it's a good report, you know, bringing us up to date on where we are on that. And it's interesting to find that, what was the name of the company? Landmark, and what was it?
Dunphy,
that they've come to an agreement. However, let me pose this. You sent them a letter notifying them that they were in default. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Do they have the option of fixing those problems?
They do. And in our agreement, our existing agreement with them, truthfully, it doesn't have teeth to really hold them to it. Every time we hold them in default, they are easily cured, those items. We've been over the agreement with a fine-tooth comb with the attorneys. It's not the greatest agreement to basically force the city's hand.
Okay, so they can fix it and just continue on?
That's correct.
No, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just asking you.
Yeah.
The question, is there a point where we can say, okay, enough's enough, that you're in default, that's it.
Unfortunately, there's no provision in that lease that provides for multiple defaults and being able to cut it off.
Our agreements today, when you have multiple defaults, this agreement says they have 30 days to cure a default. Typically, the agreements we write today state that if there's a history of repetitive defaults, it takes
right.
it to a whole other level, and we can then cancel the contract.
Right.
This 1988 contract, which they assume doesn't provide for that escalation. So
right.
we're in this default, cure, and
right.
we can't take it to the next level, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Kind of like violating probation.
Yes.
I mean, at some point in time, you're done. But here's, I guess, where I'm headed with this. You know, no one, based on these fuel sales, is going to come in here and put another FBO in here with Landmark being here. I mean, it just doesn't make economic sense for them to do that. However, if Landmark wasn't here, obviously, you know, that would be, more lucrative for someone else to come in. Yeah, and then let me ask you the other, if we can work something out with Landmark, if they'll sign a stiffer contract and be held to some higher standards than what we've got now, I might be willing to extend, you know, their lease. I don't know how long they're wanting to extend their lease, but, you know, we can't continue to go on, you know, the way we're going now with the way they're conducting themselves. But let me ask you this question. Why would you want to have lower standards for, are you talking about an FBO coming in?
Correct.
Why would you want to have lower standards for someone? Seems like you would want to have higher standards.
We're not reducing the standards.
Right.
We're providing some additional flexibility in providing other services.
Okay.
But as far as the square footage or the number of staff members, the amount of infrastructure that they're putting in, all that stays the same.
Okay.
What we don't want to see is a duplication of services that we already have on the airport.
Right. Okay.
So by offering that flexibility, perhaps there's another outfit out there that may want to concentrate more on one level of service to offset fuel sales.
Right.
And supplement their FBO operations.
Right. But then, this council is going to have to make a decision at some point in time. If you want a different FBO in there, Landmark can't be here, obviously, because there's just no room for two FBOs to operate you know, at the same time. There's just not enough business there.
Mr. Gwynn, what we were saying on that is currently to operate an FBO to conduct fuel sales, you must provide flight instruction.
Right.
You must provide avionics. You must provide maintenance.
Right.
To bring a second FBO on board, it hurts. It duplicates services, and it's unfair to all these people that are currently providing their services.
Right.
This is not a healthy and competitive environment. There's
right.
not enough business to support it.
No.
So what Matt is saying is let's add to the menu of services that we can provide. Let's bring in prop repair as one of the standard services.
Okay.
A higher level of engine repair. There's a variety of other services we can add that are not in direct competition with this.
Okay.
And that's what we are proposing, to expand the services.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's, sounds good. But we're still at some point in time going to have to deal with, you know, the issue of Landmark and extending their lease.
Well, we're at that point where Dunphy and Darling and Landmark have worked out their arrangement.
Right.
Landmark has guaranteed that they will assume 6,000 square feet of the new general aviation terminal at a specific rate, which is great.
Okay.
That part of the equation is solved. But if Landmark wants to, the third leg of that stool is for them to work on an extension with the city for 7 to 10 years. But unless we get these fuel issues resolved and some of the other performance issues resolved, we couldn't make that recommendation in good faith to City Council.
Right. Yeah, we've got to do something about the fuel prices. I mean, this, you know, I'm not a pilot or anything, but I know I hear stories of people, you know, refueling in other places. As you can see, the list of places where you can buy fuel, a lot less expensive.
So Landmark's doing a lot better in a lot of other places, and we're just a notch on their belt. They really kind of are just, we're not high on the, it's not like they run into the office every morning and let's see what's going on Ocala.
No. I recently conducted a survey, looked at all the Landmark locations. The majority of them are commercial service airports. The majority of them are pumping over 2 to 4 million gallons of fuel. The majority of the locations are assumed leases. Incidentally, a lot of those locations require specific local auditing of their numbers annually. Our agreement is vague when it comes to that, but that's something that we also have to clean up and work out if we ever extend their lease. But it doesn't, you look at Ocala and you look at their other locations, and it's almost like we don't quite fit in their corporate structure. And I'll share this. When you go to any of these large aviation trade shows, the National Business Aviation Association, 35,000 people in attendance, huge, huge floor displays. And you walk through it and you see all the other different FBO locations. You might see a Phillips 66, and then they'll have all their individual locations within their main display. Air BP, same deal. All their individual locations are advertising their individual locations. And you come up to Landmark, and it's about a 50-foot wall, and all it says is Landmark. And it has some nice chairs and tables, and you can go in there and talk to their corporate executives. That's the difference.
That new fancy logo we got's not plastered up there?
Nobody's logo is plastered up there.
Well, I mean, it just sounds like we've got to get a little bit of leverage in negotiations, and we don't have a lot. It seems like they pretty much have everything, and we just bump along, and we're at their mercy, correct?
Right.
In a sense, so.
In a sense, that's correct.
We need to.
I will say this.
Fire a little shot.
I have to give credit to the local Landmark staff. They do a great job for what they're given and the terms that they have to operate under from the corporate level. The services that they do provide are top notch. There's been a couple issues. They may not meet aircraft or park them every now and then, but we stay on top of them when it comes down to that. So we're watching out.
So we will continue to work the issue with Landmark, and if we're successful, we'll certainly bring back this proposal as a three-party proposal. If we're not, we'll advise council accordingly.
That was very good. You done very good, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one more thing. I mean, as far as that lease is concerned, I know it's up in 2018, but I would like to see us bring back a lease that, you know, we like, that's got teeth in it and everything, and say, you know, we'll redo the lease, and it's till 2018, not till, you know, 10 years beyond that. And let's see how you do in the next 8 years. Hopefully it'll be better than you've done in the past. And then we'll talk about extending the lease. But, you know, other than that, you know, I don't know really what else to do. But, I mean, I would take a little harder line position with them on what they're going to need to do. And, I mean, has Pat looked at this lease?
The proposed or the?
The current lease, to make sure that, you know, we've got some options and we've.
Yes, yeah, numerous times. We've gone through the existing lease. And as far as the terms of a future lease, we know what they've already agreed to at other airports. Puts us in a great negotiating position.
Okay.
So we'll form that up, get it through legal, and then fire it off to Landmark here shortly.
Okay.
So we can wrap this up.
Great. Do you know when that might be coming back?
The airport lease policy we'll be bringing back at the next council meeting, and Matt, you're about to advance to them the new terms, what's lacking in terms of the current contract, right?
That's correct. After it goes through our legal and we send it to Landmark, it'll be in their hands to review it and come back to us. So in essence, it's the ball will be in their court before it comes back to City Council for review.
Okay. And where are they in curing the default?
They'll cure it in the next 10 days.
Okay. Well,
well within the 30 days.
Okay. Well, I would stay on top of that and make sure that they do. And in the new lease, you know, you're saying we don't have any provisions for doing audits of the lease and make sure they're performing what they're supposed to be performing?
In the existing lease, under the existing terms, it's very vague. I know, if you recall, we had some issues with them in the past on that. But we know that they've agreed to it at other airports.
Right.
We will include very specific reporting requirements in any proposed lease extension.
Yeah, because I think they were saying that they can't break out what Ocala's production is or fuel prices.
They commingle their revenues with other airports is what they told us. That's not what we're finding in our research. Under a new lease, that has to be a separate accounting.
And they're saying that each airport's not its own profit center, so they have no idea to know if each airport is making money, just Landmark as a corporation's making a profit. I've never heard of that. That's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
I mean, that's like Bank of America saying we have no idea how that each branch is doing.
Right.
We just look at, you know, Bank of America as a whole. I don't think so. So anyway, all right, that's all I've got.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, at this time I'm going to call up Kathy Crowell, Director of Rec and Parks, to discuss the golf fund operations.
Good afternoon. Kathy Crowell, Recreation and Parks Director. So a couple months ago we had a workshop and we talked about the state of the golf course finances, and our situation really hasn't changed a whole lot since then. We're still looking at about $110,000 operating loss for the current year, and about another $250,000 in debt service and internal services. So looking at about $350,000 loss, and probably through the next year would expect a similar situation. So we had committed at the workshop to negotiate some maintenance contract revisions, and we did that, and that contract will be coming forward to you shortly. We've implemented those changes, so we're already realizing those savings. That contract should come to you in August or September. And then we also talked about putting out a food and beverage RFP, and we have that prepared and ready to go out if you do want to move forward with that. Basically, the improvement, the increase in revenue from that will come through allowing a change in our liquor license. Right now we just do beer and wine, and then also some other food and beverage catering options that we don't capitalize on right now at the banquet hall. So we'll move forward with those. I think with those two things, we probably could close the operating gap. And like I reported before, we're probably still not going to impact that, the debt service portion of that. And we'll continue to try to plug away at that. Since that meeting, I have had several golf course management companies contact me. Candace and I sat down with a couple of them, and I know some of you called me about to put me in touch with some of them. So I wanted to inquire about council's willingness to issue a, not a request for proposals, but a request for information so that we could at least hear what some of these companies have to say. I think that you need to hear what some of them have to say. I don't know, you know, I know that a lot of the savings that comes from using a management company is on the benefit side of things, where they can hire people cheaper than we can. But we only have one full-time person, so I am doubtful they'll find a lot of savings there. But we do have a pretty high-cost maintenance program, and I don't make, other than the changes I'm going to bring to you, I don't want to make any other reductions because we've just invested $2.5 million and we need to take care of it. So internally, there's really not much more we can do on the expense side of things. What these management companies tell us that they can do is that they can increase your revenues. And that's, we're trying. There's, you know, Candace, I have to say, she does a phenomenal job of managing this course. And on the marketing side of things, we're out there more than any other course out there. Now, we're not selling golf for $10 like some of these courses, but you know, we're out there and we're doing everything we can to get our share of that market. But these companies have these marketing engines that are, you know, they have staff that this is what they do day in and day out, managing the data and the demographics. And just, I'm hearing enough from them that I think maybe you need to hear from them. And so I just wanted to inquire about your willingness to issue a request for information. It's not a formal, they're not going to submit a formal proposal. They will look at our numbers and then they'll come back and say, you know, they may come back and say, okay, we'll manage it, but you're going to have to pay us $100,000. And then they may show the revenues that cover that. Or they, you know, maybe a lease type thing like we entered into with Clark. But I just wanted to get your feedback on whether you're interested in that.
Mr. Quinn.
So on the revenue side, it's $110,000 we're short right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you think you can make that up with the food services and such?
Probably,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And how are we? We're short $250,000 on the debt service?
Yeah, we have $173,000 in debt service.
Right.
And then we have $72,000 on internal services, which includes like IT and our building maintenance services. So.
Okay. So that's the cash flow that we're getting from operations to pay the debt service. We're short, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, even if we can cover the shortage, we have about $100,000 shortage just in operating.
Right, okay.
So even if we can cover that with the changes that we're making, we still need to cover that debt service in our internal services.
Okay. So it's not 350, it's 250 total, right? Operations and debt service.
No, it's 250.
250 plus 110.
Right.
Okay.
It's about 350.
How do these companies tell you that they can increase the revenues?
To be honest with you, they don't get into a lot of specifics at the stage where they're sitting in a room with me, because they consider some of this to be their, you know, their business model.
Right.
And I did ask that question. I know several months ago, John and I were in a meeting together, and I asked that question of someone. And again, the answer was in the personnel side, and I explained our situation. But then when he shows me his support from a marketing and promotions and the way they manage their demographic data, and we do a lot of that. But
what else can they do that we're not doing?
But we're one full-time person, and then, you know, us at admin supporting that.
Right.
So, you know, when he shows me a sheet that shows he's got 8 people who work on this all day long and that's what they do, there's a great deal of target marketing that has to go into this. And it's, you know, when someone hasn't showed up at your golf course in a month, do you pick up the telephone and call them and say, hey, we miss you? Well, we are running on a, and again, I don't want to make it sound, they're doing a phenomenal job, but we have limited resources. We have pared this budget back to try to stay within our revenues, and so these people are doing this for multiple courses. There are economies of scale, and it's just, that's what they sell me on, is that they have this opportunity to go out there in these databases of golfers around the state that travel, and we don't have that information.
Well, here's, I guess, my comments. Valley Crest is doing a great job on maintaining the course, phenomenal job. I don't even, and like you said, you know, we just spent whatever it was, $2 million, you know, fixing it up. A lot of that was underneath the ground, you know, redoing all the pipes that hadn't been fixed since, you know, 1985 or 88. However, you know, I want to make sure that we take care of that golf course and make sure it's done correctly. Valley Crest seems to be doing that. Sometimes in the past, we've had, I think, problems with taking care of the properties that we have, be it the football fields, the, you know, baseball fields, just, you know, some of the things that we've got, sometimes we're spread thin and we just don't have the staff and the manpower to do that. But I want to make sure that golf course is, you know, in tip-top shape the way it is right now. I would never want that to level of service to decrease, to save, you know, some dollars somewhere else. Does Valley Crest have a management firm where they can do some type of management? Or are they just strictly in the landscape business?
They don't have a management firm. I did talk to them yesterday. They were in town to do a course review. And they do have partnerships with management companies
right
nationwide. So
they just don't do it themselves.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I know they were, I think, talking to the country club about doing their maintenance on their golf course. I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know, getting information. I'm not really at the point where I want to go out for some RFP to see about managing the golf course when we're in the process of trying to fix, you know, what the problem is. Let's try to fix what we've got, do what you're talking about doing, you know, with the food services and such, see how that works. And then, you know, if that doesn't work, then we can look at, you know, at some options. I don't have a problem with just getting information, but I don't want to put out a request for a proposal.
Okay.
How much do we lean on our golf board to help us out there? I mean, we've got these advisory boards, and Matt talked about the airport advisory board and not quite a seeing eye to eye with the staff there. And I mean, that's, in my mind, that's what these advisory boards are, to help us out a little bit. I mean, is the golf board in tune with this? Are they helping out, or?
The golf board's in tune. They're not, elbow deep in the finances of the course itself. And we actually back them off of that a little, because sometimes you'll get recommendations, we'll cut this or cut that, and they don't understand the impact of those cuts. Maintenance was a perfect example. I mean, we cut maintenance for years and then we paid the price for it. So we kind of back them off of that a little bit. I think they give us more advice on local issues as far as, you know, when we want to put a fee increase in place, how they think that people will react to that, or when we want to change the dress code, how that will be received. And they do serve kind of as our eyes and ears out on the course, and will let us know. The dress code was a perfect example. You know, they'll hear things and they'll let us know, well, I think maybe that's running some people off, make this adjustment, but they're not doing those things for us, like drumming up business.
Can we kind of task them to help them a little bit?
And I think they bring their buddies over, kind of thing, but it's not, yeah, I mean, we could use them more as ambassadors, but again, there's five of them, and
we've got these boards, and I'd like to see them, you know, contributing a lot, but it doesn't appear that, you know, here's an aspect where I think they could help. So, I mean, because I'm not quite sure where our sales are coming from, if we really want to kind of market to outside sales, or if we want to really kind of grow our local market on the sales. But,
I think from a local standpoint, we might be a little tapped out as far as, I mean, there's a lot of golf courses here, and another one getting ready to open. And even the Valley Crest people said yesterday, they don't know if 5 courses across the nation going to open. So it's unbelievable that there's another course going to open in Marion County. So it's just, there's a lot of options here, and you can go golf for $10 for a round of golf right now. And, you know, we talked about that. We could, you know, we could say, okay, Tuesday's our slow day. Let's give golf away for $10. But unfortunately, unless there's 2 more golfers to come out there, the guy that's paying 30 over here is going to come over here and play for 10. And then unless he brings 2 people, unless 2 more people are enticed and come, then we just lost 20.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a game that gets played, and, you know, the people that are the courses that can afford to do that, they're supplemented through, you know, their people live on those courses, and they're supplemented through taxes and that sort of thing, that, you know, real estate that we don't. Well, I guess we are subsidized through taxes and real estate, so we are kind of similar, I guess, but you get what I'm saying. We can't afford to give golf away, and really the experts recommend that you not give it away, that when you start discounting like that, you should sell your product for what it's worth. And we do try to float with the market.
Right.
And then we look at who we consider are our comparables that are selling the same type of product we're selling, and to the same, who's competing for our same customer. And we try to make sure we're floating somewhere in there,
right,
with the product that we have to offer. So if it's a course that, yeah, they're competing for the same people, but we don't consider their course to be in as good a condition, then we might want to be a couple dollars more than them. So
the golf course only has a few revenue centers. The green, the tee sheet, snack bar operations, food and beverage, the pro shop, and banquet rooms and special events. And so our interest in speaking to companies like Kemper Sports and Billy Casper Golf and Arnold Palmer Golf is to try to leverage some of their experience and expertise in those operation centers to see what they might be able to bring for us to maximize our revenues in those areas, whether it's mass buying potential or how they manage the database of golfers and how they market, how they bundle things together, whether it's equipment or food and beverage associated with golf, and how they put their promotions together. So that's our interest in learning a little bit more about their offerings.
And those are the companies that you just mentioned, John, that you've been talking with?
Yes.
Is it Billy Casper Golf,
yes.
Arnold Palmer?
Kemper Sports. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, let's get some information from them. I mean, those are obviously all quality companies.
Right.
You know, on the equipment side, I mean, you've got, you know, a lot of these golf shops that are obviously doing a great job in equipment. I mean, mm-hmm. they could probably have, you know, a golf shop in there with a lot of equipment because we have a lot of room.
Right.
And make, you know, a good amount of money just off of that alone.
Right. And they have pretty big buying power. They manage a number of golf facilities throughout the country. They have pretty big buying power.
So my question on the timing, here's what concerns me. If I put this food and beverage out, and he just made a perfect point about the bundling. You know, right now we can say, okay, we're going to throw in a hot dog and Coke with this round of golf on Wednesday, but we lose a little bit of that flexibility, not all of it, because we can negotiate some of that with food and beverage. But once we start doing that, we're kind of getting in their pocket as opposed to, so I want us to think through the timing. Do we hold off on the food and beverage, put out the request for information instead, and we'll get it out within a couple weeks, get some responses back, maybe rank them and have a couple of them come talk to you, because I think you need to hear what they have to say, and then and hold off on the food and beverage, because obviously if we do decide that we are interested in that, and we've put out an RFP for food and beverage, and we lose our credibility, and we don't award it, then we're going to lose some credibility there.
Yeah, what I was saying before you put out a request for proposal, I was talking about doing our food and beverage. If you're just getting information, yeah, well, you could wait on the food and beverage and then get that all at the same time. Okay. And then you could, we could really pretty quickly decide, yeah, this is worth pursuing. Okay. You know, let's incorporate the food and beverage and, you know, some of the revenue that they could probably generate, because they may have a relationship with, right, who knows, you know, right, some type of restaurant or something that they could bring in there and do even better than, you know, what we're proposing to do.
Well, and a lot of these companies have a food and beverage branch. And some of the conversations that, that we had started with their food and beverage side, because that's what we were looking into at, right, the time. So, you know, these companies can come do just food and beverage, or they can, you know, they prefer to come do it all, obviously. But
what are some other courses that they're managing currently in Florida that you're aware of?
Jacksonville, I know. Palm Coast.
Amelia Island, Jacksonville. Billy Casper has courses there. Kemper Sports runs Palm Coast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They run some courses in Orlando.
Right.
But we can get you a complete listing. It's pretty comprehensive.
Well, we can ask them to give us a listing.
In that, right, request for, yep, information, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Mr. Priester, do you have any comments about
that? No, good. Go for it, RFI.
I'll just take a couple minutes. When I was reading through the last minutes of the tennis board, I was, it struck me that one of the complaints is now that the courts are used so often that people are having trouble getting times, because they're so busy and there's so many classes. And I think that's a good example of a management, you know, where the, we've gone out for an outside management company to come, mm-hmm, and the success of that. And so I'm kind of the same. I think we should go out for the information, hold back on the food and beverage, and just see what they can do. Because I think when the person that's managing it, their income depends on how successful that operation is, they have a vested interest to make it do well. And I think the tennis is a good example of that. And it's great to see that there are complaints that people can't get a court. So,
yes, it is.
Anyway, that's all. And if anyone has any more questions for Kathy or comments, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to call up Bill Stevens, city engineer, to speak to the unpaved roads program.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Just to bring you up to date on where we are with the unimproved road program, I guess one of the questions that came up is why, as part of a $1.3 million program, we only asked for $110,000. Reason being, there's an awful lot of unknowns and an awful lot of concerns whether the adjacent property owners are going to truly dedicate the right-of-way free will to us. So a new graphic that I put together is the five steps that gets us to construction. Right now we're in step one. We're going to identify all the adjacent property owners. Then we're going to go to step two and send out a letter. And it's just simply going to say we're entertaining to build a road, a paved roadway. Do you want us to proceed or not? If we get a no vote, one no vote, we're pretty much dead in the water. We need all the right-of-way. It doesn't help us if we have 90% and the last person on the connecting street says no. Then if we get all the positive responses, then we go on to step three. That's when we really do the work. We go out and do a survey. We do draw the plans up. We get pre-approval from Swift Mud or St. John's Water Management District saying, yes, we like your design. It's permittable. Go forward. Then we would come back and send to the property owners a parcel sketch showing what part of their residence or property is going to be impacted. Some people say, yeah, I'd like to see a road built, but when they see that they have to give up 20 foot of their front yard, the answer is going to come back no. So I hope that explains a little bit of how we're trying to implement this program. We're taking baby steps, trying to get through all the unknowns. Then once we get through all of those unknowns, then we can move forward. If we get 100% responses saying, go build it, hey, we'll go forward.
You wouldn't have to give up 20 feet of your front yard to paved. You wouldn't have to give up 20 feet of your front yard to have your road paved, would you?
There's one roadway that is 11 feet wide, and between the fences is 15 feet. We have to do our calculations to determine how much swale grass area is needed to accommodate the roadway which has got to be 20 feet minimum width for a one-way road, how much land is needed to accommodate the stormwater. In theory, if you're taking only from one side, it might be 20, might be 10, 10, might be 5, 5. Every case is going to be different.
Okay. But just as a general rule, you wouldn't have to take 20 feet?
We hope not.
Yeah.
We hope not.
Yeah.
But there's some that are extremely tight.
Right.
There's one you can barely get a vehicle down.
Right.
And there's no right-of-way at all.
Okay.
Okay.
So the map that you have before you are the remaining unpaved roads in the city that are currently maintained by the city staff.
Correct.
At the bottom of your map, which is labeled A, that is the currently CIP improved project that we'll be doing this year. That's in the Poinciana Heights District, and we will be improving that roadway. We have the funds and the right-of-way to do that, so that will be accomplished in the coming year.
Good. Not many of them.
No.
Northwest 33rd Avenue looks like it's a pretty good stretch of road.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then that would conclude our presentation for today, unless council has any other questions or anything they would like us to see changed in any of the funds that we reviewed. Because going into the ninth workshop, we're basically going to bring back the entire budget with all the funds balanced as they've been presented to council. We will have what's called an add-delete list, if you will, as we continue to scrub the data. You know, we rebalanced this, changed out. We've had some new revenue estimates. And we will provide council with an overview that shows what changed on the revenue side, what changed on the expenditure side, so you can follow along. We'll also bring forward the fee schedule, which, as indicated, we don't have any fee increases, as well as the key management practices.
Okay. But that's the budget.
That will be in its entirety on the 9th for council to be able to see what you'll have going into the public hearings in September. Okay. So on the 9th, which is why we're asking, are there any changes you want to see before going into the 9th? Because if there's no changes for the 9th, that's what will be presented in the first public hearing.
Did a good job.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
And Cindy, we'll be asking them to adopt the tentative millage rate on the 2nd.
On August 2nd, that is during their regular city council meeting. That's correct.
Before we go, just checking to see if there's any public comment, if anyone from the audience wants to comment on anything we've heard today. See none. Anything further, Mr. Priester?
Oh, no. Wonderful job, Cindy.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Jackie gave me a copy of it. I think she made copies for me. What was the letter from you, Karen?